Welcome to Direct to Audio, a movie discussions podcast. My name is Spencer, and it is spooky season where we talk about horror movies. And today, that has a double meaning because we'll be talking about a movie that is supposed to be scary, but is so bad it's horrifying to watch. Natalie is back on the pod.
Hello, happy to be back.
You know what's nice is that you've beaten your record of just once a year, because now you're on two.
I can't believe it.
Yeah. So I'm happy to have you back. And this is one that we mentioned.
Yes. I like how every podcast I've been on, it's like somehow linked to a previous one. Because it's like every time it's like, oh, well, we mentioned this and then we do an episode on it.
So I think we're going to have to just figure out at the end of this one what movie we casually reference. And then...
Exactly. That's the next one. So if you're as a listener, it's a little scavenger hunt. What's the preview for the next episode?
Yeah.
Well, we gotta introduce the movie then.
Yeah. Which I always love that I have to do that because it's like they clicked on the episode. Like it's not like mystery episode of the week. But
the movie is of course Stephen King's directorial debut
and finale.
And finale, Maximum Overdrive.
Yeah. Oh my God. I mean, full disclosure, I listened to their podcast. I've mentioned them on a lot in the pod, Dead Meat, and they brought this movie up a long time ago. And that's what made me watch this film. And holy shit. I was like jaw on the floor laughing at how bad it was. And then, yeah, it came up somehow, and I was like, that's got to be for horror spooky season, because I feel like you and I just cover shit posts of movies, it feels like.
Yeah, yeah, I completely agree. That's a good way to describe some of the movies that we've reviewed. And this movie, I mean, this movie gets me because it's an unintentional shit post. I mean, I think it's a horror, but it was clearly, like, some elements are supposed to be, like, comedic in like a black comedy way, but I don't think it's intentional.
Thank you.
It's supposed to be a serious movie.
So that's what's funny is that it's listed online as a black comedy horror film, but I think that is a after the fact kind of retcon.
Yes. I agree. Yeah, like later Stephen King was like, no, it's supposed to be funny. Like, I don't know, man.
Yeah, I don't know if you. It feels like The Room where Tommy Wiseau was like, no, it's a comedy. Everyone's no, you meant it to be serious.
Yeah. I want to say that my exposure to this film is that I am like a Stephen King head. Like he is my favorite author. I love Stephen King. The fourth book in the Dark Tower series is probably my favorite book of all time. I heard about this movie. I'm like, oh, a movie directed by Stephen King. Like, I gotta check this out. I've seen a lot of the other movies based on his books, and they can be hit or miss, but, like, I'd say generally they're at least decent.
I mean, but the thing is that there's so many, so it's like the net is cast so wide.
But, so, I was like, well, he directed it. I gotta check it out. And then I am confronted with this absolute monstrosity of a film.
And, listener, if you've never heard of this movie or seen this movie, it is a fucking trip. It is based on a short story he wrote called Trucks. And, it is his directorial debut. He has stated that he was coked out of his mind.
Yes, this is peak Coke King.
Yeah, and the cast and crew said that he would show up to set at 8 a.m. and be drunk by 10.
Yeah, yeah, he would just show up and he's already chugging beers.
Did you see what he did when he was coming to set, though?
So the film, I believe it was filmed in North Carolina, and so he rode his motorcycle all the way down from his home in Maine.
If you didn't catch that, Maine is like his love. It's Maine and it's baseball are his two things that like he is obsessed with. If you want to play a fun game, listener, watch a Stephen King movie and then find when he mentions baseball, because at some point in the movie it will bring it up.
It will happen. He rides his motorcycle down from Maine and he just shows up to the studio lot. And he's like all disheveled and he looks like shit. And the security guards wouldn't let him in because, and he's like, no, I'm the director. And they're like, no fucking way.
And he kept rambling about fuck. He's like, I'm gonna make an alien movie about trucks.
Yeah. He's like, I'm making a movie about trucks killing people. And they're like, this guy's fucking nuts. And they, yeah, they had to get like one of the, like the crew or something like that to be like, no, this is really the guy. You gotta let him in.
Yeah. He rode his motorcycle because he wanted to see how scary trucks were up close.
Yeah. He was like, I want to get the full semi-truck experience.
He has since called this movie a moron movie and has said he never wanted to direct again, which is a great line. But so, yeah, this movie is literally about a comet being over Earth that makes machines turn on and try to kill people or take over the world. The rules of the spoiler alert.
Right.
Alien that is... a broom. Oh fuck, that's Stephen King wording. But that are taking over these machines. They're really fast and loose.
Oh yeah. Because like 1 second, it will be like, oh god, it's every machine, and you gotta stay away from all electronics. And then you will see people like using a jukebox or something like that.
Or driving a car.
It's just, I don't know. Who knows? It doesn't matter.
Because, yeah, this movie, yeah. So if you ever wanted to see 40 minutes of cars just destroying the ozone layer by pumping out so much fucking exhaust.
Okay, I'm so glad you said that because I wrote that in my notes that, like, this movie causes global warming.
It single-handedly destroyed an entire layer of the ozone.
Without a doubt. Semi-trucks just... driving in like a circle,
yeah,
spewing diesel fumes. It's amazing.
And listener, you'll have a blast watching this because it's so ridiculous.
Yeah, it's absurd.
Nominated for 2 Golden Raspberry Awards, worst director and worst actor for lead star Emilio Estevez,
who I believe during production was often referred to as simply as Martin Sheen's son.
Do you know why?
Yeah, because King didn't. So I believe it was Stephen King. He wanted like all no-name actors.
He wanted Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce Springsteen. Oh, that's right. He wanted Bruce Springsteen.
Notorious 80s actor Bruce Springsteen.
I really don't know if the movie would have been better or worse if he would have been in it. I really can't decide.
Also starring Laura Harrington and Pat Hingle, if you've ever seen the Batman movies from the 80s or 90s, he is just Commissioner Gordon. But the reason why it was Emilio Estevez is because... Embassy Pictures was bought by an Italian man named Dino De Laurentiis, and he specifically asked for Martin Sheen's son. Not Martin Sheen. Not even Emilio Estevez. Just Martin Sheen's son.
I just want his son. Give me his son.
He brought over a cinematographer from Italy as well, which has a tragic backstory, if you know that. Do you know what happened?
Yeah, did it? I think there's a scene where there's a lawnmower that, mm-hmm. you know, starts going crazy. And they were insisting that they remove the blade because they have to get like a close up of the lawnmower because, you know, it comes to life and tries to mow one of the characters. And they were wanting to take the blades out. But Stephen King insisted, like, no, we have to leave the blades in, it'll be scarier that way. You know, I could just imagine he's like,
I want it to be real.
I want to see the real fear. And so they didn't remove the blades. And when it started up, it like flung like a wood chip right into his right eye, which he ended up having to have removed.
His dominant eye.
And he's a cinematographer. That's like his whole thing is he needs it. And he said... he was like, I'll never be as good again.
He had been working since the 1940s and had made countless of Italian films. And this was his, third to last film.
Yeah. And it was this. It's fucked up.
And sued Stephen King and some of the production, and he settled it out of court. But like, that doesn't change the fact that you literally can't fucking work anymore. Yeah. So yeah, that had to be brought to light. That's just one of the tragic stories. But then to reverse kind of paths a little bit, one more reason why this movie is batshit insane. Not just the soundtrack, but the score of the movie was done by Stephen King's favorite band, AC/DC.
AC/DC? Yeah, I do think it's insane that they also scored the film. And they weren't just like, hey, we want to put, you know, Hell's Bells or whatever in the... They were like, no, can you guys also write the music for us?
Yeah, so listener, if you're not really sure like the difference, I think a lot of people talk about score and soundtrack. Soundtrack is when... Yeah, music is produced outside of the world and like supplied to the film. Think of like how Guardians of the Galaxy or Quentin Tarantino movies have like modern rock songs or pop songs that are in there. And then the score is going to be like, if you think of like Star Wars, all that triumphant music done by an orchestra, John Williams, where that music is done for the film. So typically when you score a movie, the movie is finished and then the person who is doing the music, they're going to watch the film and they're going to do music as the film is going on. So at some point, AC/DC sat down in a room, watched this fucking movie, and like made this shit.
Which I have to say, being the composer to initially score the film, it's got to be kind of weird because you have to watch the whole movie just without music. And that's got to be kind of weird.
Right? It might be better because I don't think the parts that are crazy is when they do like the like almost psycho Jaws, like wah, wah,
wah. Yes, and there's so much of that in this movie.
That and then bluesy numbers are just like boom, boom, boom.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Wow, 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 wow. All the time. It's very jarring.
And then punch you in the face, random ass AC/DC song that has no purpose being in the movie.
Yes. Yeah, so many of like the big AC/DC hit, like Hell's Bells is in this.
No connection to the movie whatsoever. Like, okay, For Those About to Rock is during a part where Emilio Estevez and Curtis crawl through shit. Curtis.
My favorite character.
With my least favorite character, Connie. But Connie is a fun character because do you know who she's played by? If you couldn't tell by her voice.
Yes, yeah, so Connie is played by Yeardley Smith. Who, this was one of her few ever live action roles that she's done, because shortly after this film came out, she would go on to, of course, voice Lisa Simpson.
Literally a year later, she would get cast in the Tracy Ullman show, where they had the small skits of The Simpsons, and then, her life would change forever.
Right, because, at that point, you don't even need to do anything else.
No, it's been going for, 30-something years? We got to get into this thing. It's absolutely ridiculous. It didn't make any money back in the box office. Average of 49% the way we look at these movies. Way too high. It starts right out with a shot over Earth. And what do you typically want to see when you have a movie start right up? A paragraph of dialogue telling you everything you need to know.
Yes. Yeah, and the Earth is, it gets surrounded by this, awesome 80s effects, like green fart cloud.
Yeah, it's keyed in so hard. It's just, I threw green fog over a screen. It just looks horrible. And it says, on June 19th, 1987, at 9:47 a.m., the Earth passed into the extraordinary diffuse tail of Rhea M, a rogue comet. According to astronomical calculations, the planet would remain in the tail of the comet for the next 8 days, 5 hours, 29 minutes, and 23 seconds. And this is paired with weird moaning, screaming music?
Oh, yeah. It's like this trippy... It's just really weird, the whole scene.
Cut straight to a bank, and the sign above the bank just says... Fuck you.
This is the best scene in the whole movie.
This whole opening is some of the greatest just random ass shit to ever happen. So funny. He has a cameo and the ATM says, "You are an asshole."
Yeah. And he turns around and he goes, "Honey, this machine just called me an asshole."
Not just honey. He goes, "Sugar buns."
Oh yeah, sugar buns. which I do think It does a great job of like priming you for knowing that this movie is batshit insane.
Yeah, but another fun note, do you realize who is standing next to him?
No.
His wife.
Wow.
QACDC just establishing shots of this city that we will never go to again.
Yeah, just random shots of people driving around and shit.
Yeah, and who made who? The theme song for this movie, and it is a theme that is brought up so often, but is not as deep as the movie wants you to think it is.
Yeah, yeah. You can tell that Stephen King was really going for this whole, like, do we make technology, or does it make us? But it's just so ham-fisted that, like, ugh, it's not even, it's no subtlety at all.
No, and it gets less subtle as time goes on, where he just throws in these random moments of dialogue where it's like, who is saying it?
Yeah, people will, like these horrific events will be going on, like, people will be dying, and there will be just, like, someone off to the side being like, man, maybe technology is bad.
We get two guys working a bridge operation booth, and they're playing some cards, and one dude is knuckle deep in his nose, picking his nose.
Yes, he's searching for treasure.
Yeah, and this is where it gets kind of weird, because the machine behind them turns on and activates the bridge. But if you're thinking about this movie where trucks and cars come to life, why is it trying to just kill these cars?
Right, yeah, it doesn't, again, it goes back to what we were saying, where there's no hard rules for how any of this actually works.
Yeah, and there's just a shit ton of chaos. The bridge is going up. It's like a large drawbridge. Jump the bridge. Duke's a hazard. But we get a Universal stunt show where this one dude falls from the top of the bridge, eats shit on a bike.
One of my favorite shots is, so during all of this, there's tons of just random slow motion. Like, every time a car tips over, it briefly just goes into slow motion and then goes back to normal. But one of my favorite parts is a guy falls off of the bridge. And mind you, like, this isn't like the Golden Gate Bridge where it's like this huge bridge. It looks like it's maybe 20 feet down to the water.
Yeah.
So we get this guy falling off the bridge and he's like in slow motion, and it's like a, you know, there's like a scream inserted in. So it's like, ah, but it just, it's like 20 feet, and then he splashes in. And it's like, oh, he's probably fine.
Well, he might be fine until the next thing falls in, because there's a truck that gets stuck in the middle of the bridge opening. He revs his engine so hard, his axle falls off, and his truck falls in the water.
Yes, just tumbles right in.
And this scene has everything you need in a typical, like, shit show crashing sequence. We got a fucking truck full of watermelons. We got a car full of newlyweds. We have the AC/DC tour bus. A guy on a motorcycle. Why are there so many goddamn watermelons?
And the scene just keeps going. It just keeps, like, just when I think, like, okay, we've seen it. It's chaos. Okay, the machines are coming to life. It's like, yep, nope, there's more fucking watermelons tumbling and cracking. Like, there's like a scene where there's these people in a car, and like the watermelons are like falling on their windshield, and they're like freaking the fuck out.
Not falling, one flies through her windshield.
Yes.
At like 100 miles an hour. Like, on the other side of the bridge, there's a cannon just launching these.
Just launching
them. And then one dude gets out and then just completely eats shit right in the pile of watermelons.
Yep. Yeah, which is so funny, because it's like, but why? Like, it doesn't, like, he gets back up, he's totally fine.
Yeah, and it keeps going. All the trucks crash, cars crash, and then woman screams. It just literally fades right back into Who Made Who, which is hilarious. And we never see them again.
No, that's it. Just a little opening scene, I guess.
The Green Goblin truck for Happy Toys.
The main villain of the movie.
A truck with a goblin face on it.
And again, if you haven't seen this movie, like, that might sound like it doesn't make any sense, but it is literally a big rig truck where the front of the truck, where, you know, like, the grill would be, is a giant, like, 80s Spider-Man Green Goblin.
That goblin would be covered in dead bugs.
Oh, there's no, it would say as pristine as it does. Oh, also I want to say that its eyes are the lights, and they glow red.
Could you imagine driving at night with that fucking truck?
Holy shit.
You're just driving on the side of the road and you look behind you and there's just fucking goblin eyes. And like I said, two fucking workers are sitting there talking about baseball.
Yep. Already. We got the baseball.
Yeah. And then they go to fill up the truck. The dude goes inside. Diesel was $1.08 a gallon. Oh,
it was a better time.
Better time. And then we go inside to this restaurant that's in this gas station. It's going to be the set of our movie the entire time.
Yes. Yeah. It's like a big truck stop. And without, like, no joke, basically the whole movie takes place here.
Yeah. Besides, like, we go to, like, a baseball field, some random suburb, and then the street. And that's it. We just meet our random cast of characters. There really isn't a bunch of people that have names. They don't really establish that.
Yeah. So a lot of the people that are in the truck stop, like, are characters in the entire movie. And, like, yeah, I don't know. I think a couple of them, they say their name, like, once or twice, but they are completely forgettable.
She starts off by saying, "This thing's working a minute ago, but I can't get Pete Turkey on it."
There's so many good lines in this movie.
It is Stephen King just being like, "Oh, I need to put that in here." It is his, because again, he has very specific dialogue in his books.
Oh yeah, yeah. You know Stephen King dialogue when you hear it.
I'm gonna point out probably every single one.
I have a couple written down too.
One of the best comes up next because we meet Bill, our main character. He's a chef played by Emilio Estevez. He's on parole, we find out later, and basically getting wage theft to oblivion.
Yep. His boss is like, "You're on parole. I'll call the cops if you don't, you know, work like a slave or whatever."
Yeah. Played by Pat Hingle. And I'm not going to say his name just yet because it is one of the funniest twists I've ever had in a movie.
It is. It really is.
Pat's like, "Hey, get in here." And then Bill's like, "I got eggs on the stove." And then what does he say?
He says, "I don't give a ladybug. Get in here."
I don't know. Like, that's not a thing.
"I don't give a ladybug." Nobody has ever said that.
But then we go to our random cameo.
Yes. One of his earliest roles. Yeah. So there's like an arcade in this truck stop that it cuts to. And there's a guy in there playing on the machines. And I didn't recognize him at first because he's very young. But it is Giancarlo Esposito.
He has one line.
And it is one of the best lines.
It is. He just looks directly into the camera because we're watching these machines go crazy. They're spitting out cigarette packs and spitting out money. He just goes, "Yo mama."
Just, "Yo mama."
And, he does, I mean, I don't know why, but he just starts taking all the money and all the cigarettes.
Yeah, because all these arcade machines, yeah, they're just spitting out all their stuff. One of my favorites is he's loading all of his pockets right at the end. The last thing he does is there's one of those coffee machines that, like, spits out, you know, little cups of coffee, and it's, like, just, like, dropping a cup, filling it up, and then just spitting it out.
So good.
He picks up one of the cups and, like, tucks it into his shirt.
Yeah, so he says he just has a fucking loose cup of coffee. Exactly. I mean, well, I guess we'll get to it now. We cut back like maybe 10 minutes later and this dude's still there. He gets mesmerized by an arcade machine that looks like sensory video.
Yeah. It starts like the display starts going crazy and it's playing this like hypnotic pattern of yeah, like weird shapes and stuff.
Which electrocutes him.
Yeah, just straight up fries him.
And then he just flies against the wall and dies. And we do see when Emilio comes in to look at his body, he has so many fucking cigarettes in his shirt.
It's so funny.
And those machines never stop going off.
Oh, yeah. I mean, presumably the whole movie, they're just in there going nuts.
But again, like you mentioned, like, it's this movie is very fast and loose with its rules. So like lights are fine and the jukebox is fine. And
yeah, but you touch a pinball machine and boom, you're dead. But there's also plenty of times in this movie where like things that aren't necessarily mechanical or even electronic, like still move.
The big one is sprinklers.
Yeah, exactly. Like how would that even... how would that work?
Don't go too far into it because maybe it's like simple machines or no, but then cars are fine.
Yeah. I don't know. It really is like, you cannot try to delve into it. That way lies madness.
No, yeah. I think if you wanted to play a game while you watch this, drink every time something that should come alive doesn't come alive. Drink every time Pat Hingle says Bubba. And then drink every time you have choice Stephen King dialogue and you're good.
Ooh. Yeah, and you'll die of alcohol
poisoning. You will, because we get some. Well, we get one of the stupidest moments of all time here. The gas, the guy who's pumping gas, he's filling up a truck, and then the truck just stops filling up.
Yeah, the gas pump stops working.
Which is a plot point later that they need to be filled up. So this pump said, fuck you, just because it wanted to do this next moment, because this dude is so dumb.
Oh my God.
When the gas stops pumping, he looks directly into the gas nozzle. He
puts it like right up to his eye.
And then I have never seen diesel gas.
It's pretty gross.
It's like crude oil that goes straight into his eyes.
Yeah. It's like straight up like unrefined muck.
Well, then we get just unrefined muck of noise where AC/DC just plays the fucking music, the wait. And then we cut back to the office where he's getting checked on, and there is just porn all over the walls.
Yes, I noticed that later, that just taped to this wall is just like a dozen images of just porn.
And it is 70s porn. It's naked women. Bush everywhere.
which is especially funny because I was thinking about the whoever's job it was to like create these sets was like, you know what, we need a wall of porn. This has to be
it was a thing in the 80s, because in Die Hard they have that too.
Right, that's a good point. What is up with that? Super weird.
It's weird. I don't understand it. But Pat Hingle's back. He goes, is that all? Get that out of his eyes. And this is where we find out that Bill's getting his wage fucked over. Basically, yep. Pat Hingle is telling him, you're going to work 9 hours and I'm going to pay you for 8. And he says, and he just laughs maniacally. And he keeps calling him Bubba. He goes, hey, Bubba. He calls
everybody Bubba.
Everybody gets called Bubba. It's like Good Burger. He's a dude. I'm a dude. You're a dude. Everybody's yes, Bubba. Exactly. And this grill looks fucking disgusting.
Oh my God. As someone who has worked as a cook, it is abhorrent.
There are just piles of eggs and sausage and grease. Terrible. And she's just mashing it.
Yeah. They have like the waitresses back there because the guy's got the only cook apparently, which I guess that's pretty realistic.
Yeah.
So she's like, and it's funny because the waitress is back there trying to cook. And in the background, you have all the customers being like, am I going to have to come back there and get them eggs myself? Like, Jesus.
Oh, all these dudes are assholes. Yes. Earlier when she was fixing the TV and saying Pete Turkey, the one dude goes, when you're done, give me a cup of coffee, would you?
Yeah, like, she's clearly fucking busy, you dick.
But then the electric carver next to her comes alive.
Oh, yeah, and just slices into her arm.
Here's my question.
Immediately.
Why the fuck does this random place have an electric carver?
That kind of bugged me too. I was like, I have worked in several kitchens, and maybe they were more common in the 80s, but like nowhere ever had one of those.
At a truck stop.
Yeah, what are they slicing at this truck stop? Fucking prime rib?
Her name is Wanda June. She gets her arm cut the fuck up out of.
Yeah. Which she does, and then that is like never really mentioned ever. Like, it does not cause her any trouble or anything.
No, she has like a wrap around it, and that's about it. Yep. But then all the asshole dudes are just like laughing at her.
Right. Yeah. Like this, like it is cutting her to the bone. And they're all like, oh, women. Am I right? Women in the kitchen.
Yeah. But then we see how good Bill is. He runs up, smacks it with a hammer. That's the end of that scene. Then we cut to more baseball.
Yep, guess what? And this time they are playing baseball.
Yeah, and we get one of the worst line deliveries of this movie, which is saying something. The coach just goes, sodas, I'm buying.
Yeah, sodas, I'm buying.
Coach walks over. And this honestly might be my favorite scene in the movie because it is so ridiculous.
Yes. The pop machine comes to life and just starts rapid firing these fucking pop machines.
at like 100 miles an hour. It yes. domes the coach.
No, well, I want to say the first thing it does, it hits him right in the nuts.
And then the kids laugh, and then it happens again, and then you get another great line delivery. One kid in the background just goes, "What the hell?"
Yeah. Yes. And then, yeah, like you said, it domes him, where it, like, dents his skull.
The makeup looks great.
Oh, I was just going to say, they did a really good job of making it look like his skull is caved in by this fucking pop can.
It just starts firing out, like, dozens of pop cans.
Oh, like a machine gun. It's like, boom, 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 boom. And they start running away, and at this point, like, I apparently, presumably, the machines are just coming to life everywhere and wreaking havoc, because a fucking steamroller crashes onto the baseball field, and we get again one of just an insane moment where there's a kid. So one of the kids becomes a main character, and he and this other boy are running from the steam truck, and the other boy is like too slow. He's like, "Help me." And then he falls, and we actually see the steamroller squish the child.
And when Natalie says you see, you literally, from the view of the steamroller, look down on this kid as he gets run over and crushed by a steamroller.
It's insane. And then the main kid gets on his bike and just bikes away.
And there's just bodies everywhere. The pop machine and the steamroller have taken out an entire field. Cut to a car driving, and it's fine.
Yes, it's totally fine. Totally fine. And that car, the whole movie, never comes to life or anything.
It gets destroyed.
Yeah, it gets destroyed, exactly. Like, why didn't the other cars wake it up? I don't know. It doesn't matter.
But we get our sleazy, like, Bible salesman.
Right. And we get the female lead of the movie.
Brett.
And she's hitched a ride with this Bible salesman. And she hears on the radio that, like, machines are coming to life and all that. And the Bible salesman kind of disregards it. Doesn't really give a shit.
He's drinking a flask. He's just shit-talking her. Not even wearing a seatbelt. He's just doing his own thing. And he is just, like, not even, all he wants to do is get laid.
Yeah, he's just a bastard. Like, without a doubt. Like, he feels up her leg, and, oh, it's awful.
She does say, "Eat my shorts."
Yes, I was just gonna say. Yeah, when they get to the truck stop, and, because she wants to get out, she's done with this guy. When she gets out, he's like, "You come back here," and she turns around and yells, "Eat my shorts."
Yeah, and then we see the Happy Toys truck, the Green Goblin. We're gonna call it the Green Goblin from now on. Just takes off and drives away, and then it just parks.
Yeah, yeah, it's like it comes to life, but it takes a moment to get its full murderous intent on.
And we meet our next couple, Curtis and Connie. They look like they're related.
Oh my god, they really do. Well, and we get another fantastic line, where they're newlyweds and they're driving, presumably like on their honeymoon or something, and Connie says she has to go to the ladies' room because they pull up to a gas, because they drive into a town and it's like totally deserted and all that, and they pull up to a gas station, and she goes, "I have to go to the ladies' room," and Curtis goes, "Can I come in and watch?"
Yeah, why is he asked to, unless that's like their thing, which, you know what, that's y'all.
I'm not judging.
Not judging, but on your wedding day?
Yeah, goddamn.
They get to the truck stop and see just a dude's bloody arm.
Yeah, and Connie just immediately shrieks.
Oh, shrieks is an understatement.
Yeah, she gives a real banshee howl.
She does that all movie. It's that, and then her just going, "Curtis!" And then just rambling going, "Yeah, you don't come over here, Curtis. You're going to save my ass. You're going to make sure I'm okay. You don't want to kill me."
Well, and then, yeah, she screams, and they, like, get out of the car to go investigate. And she goes, "Is he dead?" I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, Yeardley Smith is doing, like, a great job, like, portraying this character. Like, she's nailing it. But, like, oh, she's a real victim of writing because...
Yeah, she's
terrible.
her character is just bad. She's playing the typical, like, ball and chain, nagging wife. Yeah. And then it's a Disney crossover because Mater the tow truck is here and tries to attack him.
And one of the, because it starts, like, it starts trying to mow them down. And one of the times it's trying to run over Curtis, we just hear him go, shit!
And then, he's on the ground. She just screams, Curtis, are you dead? Oh, yeah. And then they get in the car, drive away from Mater because Mater takes off. Then we see more trucks come to the station. You can just smell this movie. Just smells like fucking diesel.
Yeah. So for some reason, the trucks have, I don't know, just decided to fuck with these people in this truck stop. So, yeah, we get this, like, pack, a dozen semi-trucks just circling this fucking truck stop like sharks. Well, and I think at this point, the people at the truck stop still don't know for sure that they're evil, because they're, like, driving around, but there's still this sort of mystery of, like, are they really coming to life? Is someone driving them and run away or something?
They all are kind of confused, and,
And someone asks Pat Hingle, they're like, you know, what's going on? And he says, fucked if I know, Bubba.
Fucked if I know. Oh, I hate when they repeat the fucking line. No one speaks that way. Brett scares Emilio by just being like, vroom, vroom.
She goes, yo, vroom, vroom.
And then just says, you're really cute.
Oh, my God. We get some of the worst movie flirting I've ever seen.
It goes from 0 to 100.
Yeah. They pretty much, like, walk up to each other and are just like, wow, you're hot. Yeah, you're hot, too. And then we're in love now. Like, they have no chemistry.
None. And we luckily cut away from it because we see the kid that was playing on the baseball field. He's going through the, like, kind of suburbs. All the sprinklers are going off behind him. It's a nice shot.
This part I actually thought was somewhat decently shot because, we get some nice, he's riding through his neighborhood and we get to see, like, just the chaos. And there is just dead people everywhere. There's, like, a woman hanging out her window. There's a dog.
A dog.
Yeah, there's a dead dog with, like, a toy police car, like, jammed in its fucking mouth.
Yeah, it's bad. Now, as I say, this is where we see the lawnmower. It's a bloody lawnmower. So, again, it's fine to joke about this movie, but that shit fucking sucks.
Yeah, that's messed up.
Yeah.
Oh, another thing I want to note about this scene is that during all of this, we are hearing, like, a radio broadcast. And on the basically, it's expository. It's basically just the guy is like, you know, we don't know what's going on, but, like, all over the world, electronics are coming to life and they're killing people. You know, we're being told, you know, turn everything off. And I just want to say, you are saying this
over the radio. Yep. Why would the radio not just turn off?
Exactly. But then we get another one of our big villains, a prowling ice cream truck. Also, I just want to say that its eyes are facing forward. It is a predator.
Yeah. One thing that I think is so funny to me here, it is a cool shot because you can see no one's in it. But there's a part where I hate the thing where it's like, we are the camera. And, like, there's basic comments that's like, we see that the kid's in the middle of the street and the ice cream truck turns down that street. And then we turn back to see he's gone. The truck would see him run away.
Yeah, exactly. There's just no way. There's no way that kid had time. Because then we, like, see the kid, he's, like, peeking out of a bush.
Here's my question. Are these vehicles sentient where they can just tell where everything is? Or are their headlights, like the movie Cars, their actual eyes? And
we never really know for sure. Like, do they hear? I guess they must. Yeah, because they seem to have a way where they can, like, communicate with each other. It's, again, you really cannot think too hard about this because it will not ever make sense, no matter how hard you try.
Yeah, that's true. Well, we get an immediate shot cut from the lawnmower to the dude selling the Bible. We see Duncan's, like, he's the guy who got his gas pumped. Duncan is the older one. Deke is the younger one. Duncan has bloody ass eyes and goes, I'm fine.
Yeah, I can see just fine.
And then Pat Hingle comes up out and is like, talk more shit, calls Emilio Bubba. And then Bill threatens him by going, I'll knock your teeth in, Bubba. And it's like a, ooh, it's a nice comeback. And then I guess we'll just say it here.
Yeah.
It turns
out that's his name.
That's Pat Hingle's name, is Bubba.
So his name is Bubba, but he calls everyone else Bubba?
That'd be like maybe like, so Spencer's on the pod. Spencer, how are you doing, Spencer? You good? Okay, yeah, good. Exactly. Well, this other Spencer over here, I get Bubba is like, Bubba is one of those nicknames. Dude, yeah, Bubba, guy. But if it's your name.
Your own name? You can't do that.
No. It makes Emilio's line less cool.
Yeah, yeah, because it's not like, oh, I'm turning your pejorative back around on you. No, that's just his name.
Yeah. But then we just smash cut to Duncan getting run over by a truck.
Annihilated.
And no one stops Duncan or tells him, like, the truck's coming.
Yeah, yeah. Like, they just kind of let him die.
Yeah, they let him just get run over. And this is the part that makes me laugh, is that the swindler, like, salesman guy, his car gets run over, and he breaks character so fast.
Yes. Yeah, he goes from this, like, holier-than-thou, you know, Bible salesman. And we get another amazing line where he runs out because, yeah, they're fucking up his car. And which I do think is funny that because they have, like, no reason to mess his car up, the trucks.
No.
They don't destroy it at first. They just drop a bunch of, a garbage truck comes up and just drops trash on his truck or on his car. And he runs outside and he screams, you want to rock and roll with me, puss bag?
Well, he also first says, oh, son of a bitch. Out of my way, bitch. Out of my way, bitch. You son of a bitch.
Yes.
And the Green Goblin truck, he wants to rock and roll because it just starts to go in reverse. And he does the stupid thing where instead of running zigzag, he runs straight and gets hit. And he flies into a muddy ditch across the street.
He gets hit so hard, it knocks him out of his shoes.
That's how you know you're out.
Exactly. And then we don't see him for a while.
Pat Hingle's trying to call for help. No one's answering. We get a weird line about Brett changing clothes because she wants to get the smooth-talking dead salesman smell off of her because he's dead.
Yeah, which, again, I think, just an excuse to get her in a more revealing outfit.
That's literally it, yeah. And then if you thought there was, like, all this real pollution, then we get noise pollution because these trucks and car horns just make the loudest fucking racket.
Yeah, and again, they're just circling the truck stop.
It feels like hours. They're just laying on horns. It is just so loud.
It's insane.
We see Kurt and Connie. They're driving on one side of the road. They're the other side has all the trucks going the other way. It's a nice visual. And then they get into an AC/DC theme chase. Another great line where Curtis says, I think I just loaded my pants.
Another one of my favorite lines, well, I guess two lines from this, is Connie is like, Curtis, what is going on? And he just goes, she's kind of always a little shrill, but he just, like, full-throated just screams, I don't know.
Yeah, he finally snaps at her. The truck just casually keeps, like, bumping it in the rear.
Yeah, yeah, they start to get chased by this other, by the tow truck, I think.
Yeah, and then he tries to trick the truck and do a maneuver, and then this is the funniest part to me. So they get off at an exit, and the truck, like, goes left and goes off the hill and immediately explodes.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah, like, Curtis, like, weaves around it, tricks it into falling off this hill, and then just kaboom.
It doesn't hit anything. It doesn't like flip over,
explode.
I feel bad for tuk tuk drivers who have to drive so patiently, because any sort of off movement, your car will implode.
Yeah, they're made of dynamite, it seems like.
Yeah, they decide they want to go to the truck stop. They see a sign. Then we just go back to the fucking Dixie Boy. Yep, there's all this damn noise. And they, like, try to fly through all these trucks in the circle. Curtis pulls away. There's a cool shot, though, where, like, because they got married on the back, someone painted, like, good luck, Curtis and Connie. And it's kind of a cool shot when he peels out to make it. So yeah, that's all you see. Truck just comes over and then flips this fucking car.
Oh, yeah. Annihilates it.
And then if you thought you didn't get enough of Connie rambling.
Oh, no.
She's stuck in the car. And if you didn't know that, she makes you know that.
She is just going off. Just like, I'm stuck in the car. I'm wrapped around this seatbelt. Oh, my gosh.
That paired with all the fucking horns and carnage.
And the from all the trucks.
Oh my god, it's horrible. And they run towards the Dixie, and here comes Bubba with a rocket launcher.
Yeah, with a fucking... He just steps out, and he has a fucking rocket launcher, and he fires it and blows up one of the trucks.
Just one of, yeah.
He just starts fucking blowing the trucks up.
Yeah, and he's cackling, just going, hoo-ha!
Yeah, he's like, load me another one. Like,
there's now just toilet paper everywhere, and I hope it is there to clean up the pile of shit that this movie is.
No, it's for Curtis, because he loaded his pants.
Well, it's actually for later, where we get a literal scene of a dude taking a shit.
It's a cinematic masterpiece.
It is. So the cars are not, the trucks are not pissed. They're thrashing around. Brett and just trapped. Yeah, Brett and Bill are like talking about what they're doing, and she says Maximum Overdrive.
Yeah, she says the name of the film. It's like they're all in Maximum Overdrive.
Well, we go to the kid on the bike, and he's at the exit where the truck blew up. He biked like 50 miles.
Yeah, this kid is a machine.
Well, if he was a machine, he'd get turned into one of these fucking things.
Good thing he's not.
We get our next one, which is a plane playing Flight of the Valkyries.
Yes, it's like a crop duster. And so, yeah, you just hear like the dent da da da.
Which means it is diegetic sound.
Yes, yes.
It is part of their universe.
So the plane has like, I guess...
A speaker.
Yeah, it has a speaker, and it's the 80s, so I mean, what, it has like a tape deck inside of it, an 8-track player, perhaps?
Yeah, and so for those of you who don't know what diegetic sound is, like, if you're ever watching a movie and they're listening to a song and then they have to, like, pause it to hear what someone else is saying, that's diegetic. It means the song and the sounds that you're hearing are coming from the world that the characters in the movie are in. Right. Then there's non-diegetic sound, which is like the score, so all the AC/DC like noises.
I like how you said the AC/DC noises.
Well, it's not music. It's just noise.
Yeah, it's a good way to describe it.
This movie is just noise. He dodges the plane, which we find out later just fucking dive bombs a school bus.
Yes, just for no reason.
Yeah, like it just fucking dive bombs a school bus. And as I said earlier, we cut to Joey, who is Bubba's right-hand man, who's feeding his rocket launcher rockets, taking the wettest shit I have ever heard.
It's literally that we have to. That's essential. It has to be in the movie. We have to see him taking it.
Oh, not just see him. You hear fart noises, water splashes, shit.
It's just why?
It just. And. Why? Bill and him have a conversation over him taking a shit about what...
And Bill actually, like, peeks over the stall...
Multiple times!
Like, why?
And again, this is a dude, a bigger dude at this truck stop, taking a shit.
Yeah, this guy is blowing up this bed.
Right, and we couldn't have this conversation somewhere else. Stephen King was like, no, this has to be in the movie.
It has to be.
And then cut to the basement. We see all this fucking weaponry.
Because he had went in there to be like, tell me where all the guns are at, kind of thing.
Yeah, and then Brett's down there. Bubba comes down, threatens them. And then Bubba's like, hey, he went to jail because he did an armed robbery. You want to be with a crook? That gets thrown away.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It has nothing to do with the story.
Yeah, there's a funny moment where, like, Emilio starts to explain the robbery, and she's like, it's all right, and he just keeps going. He's like, no, I want a monologue, damn it.
I want to tell you.
You are going to hear my story. We see Bike Boy. He's at the gas station now.
Oh, yeah, so he makes it, but it's being guarded by the trucks.
And he goes to the sewer pipe, and the sewer pipe is, has a grate over it. And then just cut to Brett and Bill. They banged.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I love a awful shoehorned in sex scene. Oh, and don't forget Brett looks at him and says, you sure make love like a hero.
Yeah. And then why are Emilio's eyes so bloodshot this whole movie?
Yeah, he's probably high as hell.
That's probably true. But I need you to think about this, listener. Remember, they are in a random-ass truck stop with, like, probably 40 people.
Killer trucks.
And killer trucks, and they had to pound one out.
Oh, but yeah, essential. Oh, and they're doing it right by the porn wall. I don't know if you noticed
Hey, you gotta get that stimulation.
Where better?
And then they talk about how there's an island where it's called Haven. There's no motor vehicles allowed. Basically, it's Mackinac Island. It's an island here where there's no cars, no trucks, nothing.
Yeah.
And then they plan to go to the island.
Like a Day of the Dead kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. But their plan is to get on a boat, get on a sailboat, and then sail over there. We then get Wanda June doing her first time of her being like, we made you! How could you?
She just snaps. She has like a psychotic break, which I mean, I guess I can't fucking blame her.
And the truck's just like, bah, like, fuck off.
Yeah, they, like, don't even give a shit. She's just out there just screaming, like, we made you! You can't do this!
This, folks, is padding, because then we get people just playing fucking card games, and then one dude says, maybe my favorite line, he randomly just goes, I like spoons.
This whole part of the movie, and I even wrote this in my notes. It's like, this part sucks.
Yeah.
This whole part of the movie is, like, just kind of nothing happens for a little while.
But then, all of a sudden, the Bible salesman just randomly starts screaming.
Yeah, he's not dead. He starts screaming from the ditch.
And then Emilio says, you know, it's like that old joke, never says it.
Yeah, you know the one.
You know that classic Bible salesman in a ditch?
Yeah, you know that one.
We see that the kid finally gets the grate open, goes across the street. Curtis and Bill are going to go across the way to get the Bible guy.
Yeah, because they're like, we got to go rescue him, you know, and the other characters are like, fuck that guy, like, who cares? And they're like, no, like, wouldn't you'd want someone to save him if that was Curtis or whatever.
Yeah, and then she says a great line, immediately followed up with a dumb line. She says, don't make me a widow on my wedding day.
Yeah, which is great.
And then Bill calls Bubba one of the biggest fuckheads I've ever met in my life.
You're one of the biggest fuckheads I've ever met.
Yeah, and then we're about to watch these two characters crawl through shit.
Yeah, literal, in the sewer.
So we need that classic AC/DC crawl through shit song for those about to rock, we salute you.
And I feel like that this is supposed to be framed as this, like, big, epic moment, because they have to, like, to get to the sewer, they have to, like, run across, like a road from the truck stop to, like, the shower house. So it's like, oh, they gotta dodge the trucks, and they gotta get down in there. And so to do what? To crawl through shit?
Yeah, they get down there, they find the kid. Bible salesman comes back to life, immediately dies.
Yeah, he comes back to life and Greg grabs the kid and he's like, pull me out or I'll kill you. And then, dies.
Emilio and Curtis get there. They pull the kid back. A truck just dies. It just, like, crashes into the ravine.
Yeah, for some reason. I think they blow up another truck at this point, too. Like, they shoot a missile at one of them.
Yeah, Emilio gets back and blows it up. Mm-hmm. And then they break the news to this kid that his dad... Because his dad, we find out, was the gas pump attendant that got gas in his eye and fucking run over.
Yeah. And he's like, is my dad okay? And they're like,
Well, Emilio just says, come on. Which is never a good answer to that.
Yeah, like...
And then Bubba just goes, your dad got scrubbed by the truck.
Yeah, he just tells him that's it. And then I think someone is like, I think it's Brett. It's like, you unbelievable shithead.
And then slaps him, yeah. And then, the trucks are now mad at the humans. Yes. And they bring along two friends.
So we get one of them. It's like this military truck. It's basically like a platform.
Yeah,
on wheels. And yep. Then it just has like a machine gun on like a pole on it.
Yeah, and then the other one's a bulldozer.
Yeah, and a bulldozer.
Yeah, and then the bulldozer starts moving all this shit, and then this dude comes in and just goes, "What the fuck's going on here?"
Busts through the door. Just what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah, and then the bulldozer cleans the way, and the machine gun just starts mowing through people.
Yeah, and we get like a full. I mean, I don't remember exactly how long it is, but it feels like a full minute of just people getting absolutely shot to hell.
Yeah, Bubba doesn't get gunned down yet, does he? Or does he? Yeah, he gets gunned down.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, this is when Bubba dies, and a couple other like the random nameless characters. And it's funny because we keep seeing shots of like people getting shot and then falling over and dying, and then we cut to more people just standing. Like, why are you like stop standing?
The gun is on a pole, so yeah, just go just below the pole.
Exactly. Yeah, it can't aim up or down. It can only aim at one height.
Right. So they get mowed over. Wanda June comes back out, starts screaming again. We made you.
Yeah, we made you.
Shoots the rocket launcher, blows up a truck.
Yep.
She gets killed. And then we hear that the little military truck has a horn.
Yeah. And it starts communicating in Morse code to them. Which just creates so many questions. So they can talk?
They can talk now. And luckily, Deke is there, the boy, because he's like, I just got my Boy Scout skills for Morse code.
So he can... And I was thinking that, too, is like, What would have happened if none of them could understand Morse code? Because, like, I don't know Morse code. I can't think of anybody I know
that knows. Well, knows robots can technically talk because they go to by a fast food restaurant and the box starts talking to them.
Yeah. Like the box that you say your order into starts talking. So it's just so. Yeah, it's just so, like I said, you cannot think too much about this movie.
No, and then we get this fucking annoying ass scene where this would be the end of the book. The Morse code is saying that they want gas.
Yeah, they need gas, and basically if the humans don't fill up their gas tanks, they're going to kill them.
Yeah, and this is where we get the Neville Chamberlain Nazis line.
Yeah, because some of them are like, we can't do that. And yeah, Brett, it's like, that's like Neville Chamberlain giving in to the Nazi.
And then Bill insinuates that they will just napalm strike the building.
Yeah. He's like, well, that is a military truck. It can call in some of its buddies and drop napalm.
Remember, like, call in. It is a flatbed truck with a horn.
It doesn't have a radio.
No. Bill March is out there. We get Hell's Bells. Again, a song that doesn't fit what we're doing here.
It has nothing to do with it.
As he...
And we get a nice gas montage.
For 5 minutes.
It's agonizing.
Yeah, and they literally... F- fill up trucks for five minutes.
He does a talk to the goblin truck, and its eyes, like, glow red menacingly. He's, like, talking shit. He's like, here's your gas, you asshole.
I think what's so cool is that in the short story, okay, I guess we'll kind of go towards it here. Mm-hmm. It ends very bleakly, where it's like, they have to continuously fill up all these trucks and the humans are now enslaved. And like the main character looks up and sees a plane flying over the sky and says, I wish I could dream that there was a human in that.
Right. Whereas this is, it just keeps going.
Yeah.
Just so boring fucking gas montage where everyone's like taking turns doing it. And they have like a gas truck come up where they have to refill the supply. And anyway, as they are finishing up, they're, like, walking back in, and Bill is, like, talking to one of the randos from the station. And he's like, oh, you know, just pretend, act natural. And as they walk by the military truck, he, like, throws a grenade on it, and then they run away, and it blows up.
He's talking so loudly.
Yes, again.
He's like, this is human business. But that you did miss the part where he randomly gives Brett the explanation of him being like, the comet is a broom,
right.
And it's aliens sweeping people out.
Which really is such a fucking Stephen King line.
Yeah, that's so Stephen King. But yeah, everybody tries to escape through the sewer. We get more shots of these trucks just fucking mowing down this building. The Dixie's done. Yeah, they're destroying it.
The trucks just go ham on the building. And then,
put it out of its misery.
So they start demolishing it. They're driving into... Some of the trucks are, like, destroying themselves.
Yeah. The dump truck puts its back up and then just pulls down the roof.
Yeah, and on top of itself. And so we get... So they climb through the sewer and they, like, are up on a hill looking out at the trucks. And then the whole thing just fucking explodes.
The gas station, listener, literally has a pyrotechnic show-style explosion.
Yeah. Which, like, okay, it's a gas station. Sure, it makes sense it would catch on fire. But, like, it is exactly a pyrotechnic. This is enormous kaboom.
I feel bad for the trucks that didn't get to fill up.
Yeah, they're like, oh no.
They're just sitting there like that, the meme of the guy holding the plate at the birthday party doesn't get any cake when people are throwing cakes around. Yeah, it's literally him. There is that moment, like I mentioned earlier, where they're like running away. They go to a fast food drive through, and then the box is like, humans are here, humans are here.
Human.
And then, okay, why would it be talking though? Because you have to speak through that.
Yeah, exactly. That doesn't, like, synthesize... Oh, my gosh, this fucking movie.
But it gets even better because Deke comes up and says, this is for my dad. And then just machine gun fucks this thing up.
Yes, he just annihilates it.
Turns to Brett, I believe, and hands her the gun and goes, I don't want this anymore. Yeah. He's officially against gun violence now.
Good for him.
Yeah, so then Curtis gets his little moment because he sees the ice cream truck... him and Brett go and just shoot it. It explodes and flips over.
Yeah. And they're not shooting it with the rocket launcher. They're just firing at it with like rifles.
Regular. Yeah. And you see the ramp that it flipped over on fire in the background.
Oh yeah. They don't even do a good job.
Stunt show spectacular.
It's incredible. That's where all the budget went.
They get to the sailboats finally.
Yep.
And they are so close to leaving. And then we see there's a corpse hanging out the window.
Huge, gaudy diamond ring on it.
And one of the random-ass fucking people that was with them is just like, I gotta go steal it.
Yep, I have to steal this ring.
And for one last time, we get the fucking psycho AC/DC yep. music. And it rams this dude.
Yes, the goblin truck is back.
If you're expecting some big climactic finale where, like, the truck brought reinforcements and is, like, going after them.
Yeah, they're gonna big fight. No.
No.
It's just by itself, and they pretty much immediately shoot it with a rocket and blow it up.
Yeah, Emilio grabs his rocket launcher, goes, adios, motherfucker, and blows it up.
Adios, motherfucker. Yeah, like, it doesn't... It hits that guy stealing the ring, and then it doesn't do anything.
Yeah, it's like, and we're done. we it does look cool when the rocket goes like into the mouth and blows up.
Yeah, that is kind of cool.
Well, we get who made who one last time, and then it just another paragraph. We don't see any of this. We don't see them survive, and we don't see what would probably be the coolest part of the movie, where we hear, or what happened in space.
Yes. So via this, again, this is this expository paragraph. Apparently, it just kind of glosses over the fact that there was a UFO in space and this is in quotes, a Russian weather satellite that just so happened to be armed with a nuke shoots it down.
It's so funny. And we could have literally cut 15 minutes of Connie screaming and gas being pumped to get that scene.
No, but no. Oh, and then we get one last line where they're like the survivors are still surviving.
One more AC/DC song. You shook me all night long. Because that just really fits into what we're doing here.
And that's it. Just what a weirdly happy ending.
Yeah, like I said, literally the short story ends with this such a bleak, almost like The Mist, where it's like you get a gut punch and you're done. And this movie's like, no, they're fine.
No, they're fine.
Except for that one dude.
And they established, too, that because the machine's going crazy was caused by the comet, once it passes, then it's like, oh, they're fine now.
They don't say, like, there's, like, any sort of, like, PTSD or there's any sort of, like, fear of them happening again or there'll be more aliens. Everyone's fine. It feels so anticlimactic.
It really does. It's super weird. It just, because it's like, oh. Okay, it's done. It's over.
And, this episode's over.
Yeah. I never have to think about this movie ever again.
Yeah, it's hilarious. It's all the right and wrong ways.
It's definitely worth, like, watching it once, maybe with, like, a group of friends that you can all, you know, make fun of it. But, goddamn, it is a slog.
That really is the best thing to do. Like, you know, just have it on in the background, laughing, making fun of it. Like I said, make a drinking game out of it or just make a game out of it if you don't drink. You could have a blast just laughing at this thing. That was your Maximum Overdrive episode. And that was, I feel like we can technically call this our second anniversary episode. Yeah, because this is technically when that podcast.
At the same time.
Yeah, so welcome back and thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always so fun.
Thank you. I promise that we are going to bring actual spooky movies into spooky season. Predator last week was, but next week, I believe we are doing an actual really spooky movie and one of my all-time favorites. We have Jamie coming back onto the podcast for An American Werewolf in London.
Ooh, that'll be great.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I'm not only excited for the episode itself, but I got to watch the movie again and I get to watch it one more time. And it's one of my all-time favorites. So listen, prep for that if you're listening to this far in the episode. And spooky season's about halfway through, but we have a lot more episodes for you in store. So keep on listening, and as always, be kind, please rewind. Intro song from YouTube Audio Library by DJ Williams. Recordings done on Clean Feed. Podcast distributed by Anchor. Original logo created by friend of the pod, David. Current logo created by friend of the pod, Liz. Purring by Storm.